This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during March. This month, we'll mark two seasonal transitions. Watch Mars slip past the Pleiades star cluster, spend some time with Orion, and learn what Sirius has to do with hot summers. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. This will be a month of transition in more ways than one. First, on March 14th, we jump to daylight time in virtually all of the U.S. and Canada. In fact, this month, clocks will spring forward in much of the Northern Hemisphere. But the date for all that time shifting varies. It comes 2 weeks later, the 28th, across Europe, and 3 weeks later in parts of Mexico, except places like Tijuana that are near the U.S. border. And because autumn is approaching for our friends down under in Australia, on April 4th, they'll switch back to standard time. If this all sounds confusing, well, it is. And even though you probably heard that Benjamin Franklin was the first to propose a seasonal shift to daylight time, that honor actually belongs to an Englishman, William Willett. He was an avid golfer who wanted to spend more time after work working on his putting. So, in 1907, Willett published a pamphlet titled The Waste of Daylight, in which he proposed advancing the clock during summer months. For us sky watchers, daylight time can be a bit of a nuisance because it means the sky doesn't get dark until well into the evening hours, especially in midsummer. For more on this whole subject, search for my Bah Humbug blog on skyandtelescope.org. March is also when Earth reaches one of the two equinox points in its year-long orbit. This month, it falls on the 20th at 5:37 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Maybe you've heard that this equinox also signals the beginning of northern spring, astronomically speaking, and the start of autumn, south of the equator. But there's more to it than just that. Equinox comes from the Latin word equinoctium, meaning equal nights. On this date, days and nights everywhere are both 12 hours long. And, if you're directionally challenged, on the equinox, the sun rises due east and sets due west, no matter where you are. The switch to daylight time has one advantage for sky watchers. During March, for most of us, the sky is once again dark when we get up each day. So try to stumble outside before dawn this month, because a beautiful pre-dawn sky beckons. You might recall that fast-moving Mercury put in a brief appearance after sunset in late January and early February. Well, now it's swung to the other side of the sun and shifted into the pre-dawn sky, rising higher each morning through early March. On the 5th, you can spot Mercury right next to much brighter Jupiter. Look about 30 minutes before sunrise and find an unobstructed view towards southeast, because the two planets are very close to the horizon. Saturn is a little farther to the upper right, keeping an eye on things. By March 7th, Mercury reverses course and starts to sink from view, while Jupiter and Saturn gradually get higher in the morning twilight all month long. If it's still dark when you head out, turn right toward south and say hello to the distinctive arc of stars marking Scorpius, the Scorpion. A few months from now, you'll spot Scorpius rising in the southeast after evening twilight fades. The only planet we can see easily after sunset is Mars. It's more than halfway from the horizon to overhead, high in the southwest. Early in March, you'll find it near the pretty star cluster called the Pleiades, or Seven Sisters, which is just a couple of degrees to the planet's right. They're closest together on March 4th, and then the gap widens a bit, night by night. Mars and the Pleiades haven't been this close together since 2006, and it won't happen again until 2038. The evening sky offers much more to see than just Mars and the Pleiades. New Moon happens on March 13th, and the full Worm Moon falls on the 28th. So the first half of March will feature moon-free evening skies. Once it gets dark, make a quarter turn to your left from where the sun set, and just look up. Wow, all the brilliant stars of winter are arrayed before us in all their glory. Probably easiest to spot is Orion, the Hunter, which is to the left of Mars by about 3 times the width of your fist held at arm's length. Look for a distinctive row of 3 stars in a roughly horizontal line that mark the Hunter's belt. For me, the belt is something of a signpost on the celestial highway. All 3 stars have names. On the left is Al-Nitak, which means the girdle in Arabic. Al-Nilam, in the middle, translates as string of pearls. And on the right is Mintaka, which means the belt. They're all very close to the celestial equator. That is, if you took Earth's equator and expanded it out into space, it would pass right through Mintaka. To the belt's lower right is the star Rigel, which marks his foot. To the belt's upper left, at Orion's shoulder, is the bright star Betelgeuse, or Betelgeuse, if you prefer. It's often stated that this is an Arabic phrase meaning the armpit of Orion, but a more careful translation of the original Arabic probably refers to his hand. Anyway, do you remember that about a year ago, Betelgeuse was mysteriously much dimmer than normal? Apparently, the dimming was caused when the star ejected an immense amount of hot material into space, which then cooled and formed a dust cloud that blocked the starlight coming from Betelgeuse's surface. If you're curious to learn more, there's a feature article about this incident in the March issue of Sky and Telescope magazine. Let's use Orion to make some other easy identifications. Higher up, to Orion's upper right, are the bright star Aldebaran and the constellation Taurus, the Bull. Beyond Aldebaran are Mars and the Pleiades. To the Hunter's upper left are the stars of Gemini, with the twin stars Castor and slightly dimmer Pollux. Higher still, almost overhead, is the bright star Capella. Now look to Orion's immediate left, and you'll see Procyon, the alpha star of the constellation Canis Minor, the little dog. There's not much to Canis Minor, actually. It's one of the smaller constellations to begin with, and Procyon and the dimmer star to its immediate upper right are pretty much the whole show. To me, the constellation looks more like a hot dog than a four-footed hunting companion. To Procyon's lower right, by not quite 3 fists, is brilliant Sirius, the dog star. Sirius and Procyon are practically next-door neighbors, cosmically speaking. They're respectively only 9 and 11 light-years away. Sirius is the brightest star in the entire sky, aside from our own sun, of course. How soon after sunset can you pick it up? Keep an eye on the horizon, directly below Sirius. It's located due south at 8 p.m. on March 1st, and, thanks to the shift to summertime, it'll also be due south at 8 p.m. on March 15th. Now go back to Betelgeuse for a moment. Imagine that it's at the center of a huge 6-sided hexagon in the sky. At the very top is Capella. Going around clockwise, we see Aldebaran, then Rigel, Sirius at the bottom, and to its upper left are Procyon, the twins of Gemini, and finally back to Capella. Congratulations, you've just traced out what sky watchers know as the winter hexagon. All of these stars are bright enough to show up even if you have a lot of light pollution where you live. Sirius is the real star of the winter season, but you can see it throughout much of the year if you know when to look. Sometime in August, it first becomes visible low in the east shortly before dawn. 5,000 years ago, because of the wobble in Earth's spin axis, this first pre-dawn appearance occurred in late June, and ancient Egyptians knew that the first glimpse of Sirius came just before the annual flooding of the Nile River. They worshipped the star as the spirit of the river, and apparently they were also the first to depict this star as a dog. In more recent times, sky watchers realized that the dog star rises and sets with the sun during late July, an arrangement in the sky known as a conjunction. Some cultures believe that whenever this pairing occurred, the heat from Sirius combined with the heat of the sun, creating the hot and sultry weather that often comes in late summer. So they named this period of time, from 20 days before the conjunction to 20 days afterward, the dog days. And today we still refer to this sticky weather as the dog days of summer. Thanks for letting me show you around the stars and planets for another month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, including a free interactive star chart for any time or date, check out our website, skyandtelescope.org. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. If you've enjoyed this, please leave a rating or a review. It'll help spread the word about Sky Tour, and I really welcome your feedback. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Next month, I'll talk about some carnivores that are stalking upward in the eastern sky. Until then, I wish you clear skies.